Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Hi, Gavin here. Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast and to season two of the podcast. Really excited about the new seasonal format and the title, the theme threading the way through season two is Revive. And kind of a subset around that is Revive Your Drive. And the background on that is so many times now I am experiencing people in business, whether they are business owners or in leadership positions, or whether they are members of the team, they're feeling pretty punch drunk after the last year of the pandemic or 14, 15 months of the pandemic. And as a result of that, I'm experiencing people in business, no matter their role, whether they are founders or whether they're employees, who are jaded, lacking morale. Lost my mojo is a phrase that I hear a lot. And what I wanted to do was to go deep on this subject. And I've got a really, really special guest, a real expert in the field, Dr. Melanie Lee. And before I allow you to introduce yourself, Mel, what I want to talk about is in this podcast is it's going to be two parts, actually. The first part is the psychology of self. And the reasoning for that is that as a business owner, a listener to this within business, whether you are a leader, whether you are a manager or an employee within a business, if you're going to improve the game of the business, the results of the business, if you're going to get a greater level of engagement and morale, and if you're going to get greater enjoyment and fulfillment from your work, you've got to understand you. And that's the whole piece around psychology of self. So that's the starting point. And then the second part to this is going to be the psychology of others. And that's going to have an impact around how you engage with teams and get the best out of the teams. But unless we start with you, and unless we get the very best out of you in your business and get you back firing on all cylinders again in your business, no, your strategy could be the best in the world, but it'll never be executed. So that's enough of me by way of backstory and introduction. Dr. Melanie Lee, welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast.
Thank you so much, Gavin. It's fantastic to be here and to spread the word.
So you're a director and a founder of Trust Psychology and Trust Pain Management. You work both with business owners and people in business, helping them therapeutically, but you've, and also you work with people around psychological trauma and chronic pain. But yeah. Through your work, you've had experiences and you told me stories about how closely linked some of the work that you may have done in your therapeutic domain and the work of business. And I want to sort of also say to everybody, listen to this. Don't worry, we're not going to sort of lay you down on the therapist couch here. This is really down to earth, applicable to the world of business. But the core of it is you and I, we're human beings. And so that's why Mel's here to help us. So I think it would be very interesting to start off with you telling that little story about those kind of like two back-to-back experiences you had in a day. And the insights you got.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, thank you for introducing my background in businesses as well. And actually, it was my exploration into becoming a business owner that led me to found your podcast and others similarly. And what really struck me is that there's a lot of emphasis on mindset and getting the best out of yourself, lots about goal setting and psychological concepts that I can absolutely relate to and understand. But what used to frustrate me at times in some of these sort of discussions is that sort of missing piece about where really good skilled psychological thinking can come in. So we have developed a lot of our therapeutic models from contemporary cutting edge neuroscience, you know, how the brain actually works, alongside what we know about relationships and all of that psychology, linking and integrating the mind and the body. That's our passion. And so there's so many ways that we can apply that to everyday life. Like you say, this is not about a therapy session. And please, if there are specific examples or things that you can think of, Gavin, that you've encountered or situations you've heard your clients talk about, we could speak to some of those as well. But yeah, I had this really interesting experience when I was working for a company, when I was an associate myself at the early stages of business, when I was working with some corporate clients. We're talking sort of senior management of a large bank. And the core role was for myself and other psychologists to offer psychological resilience coaching sessions. Okay. And earlier in the day, I'd been working with a particular lady back in the Northeast area who had incredible trauma and a completely different social economic status. But what struck me about those two back-to-back situations is, as you've said earlier, we're all human beings. So I was applying exactly the same information. My therapeutic skills in terms of how we relate to one another were almost identical. It was just the level of the conversation was slightly different. But
I think over certainly one of the biggest challenges around performance within businesses is the way that we relate with each other. The tools, I think, have moved on a lot in terms of the awareness and the culture, and the approach around leadership has developed a lot over the 25 years I've been working in corporates and in business. But yet when I see people kind of reverting or defaulting to their most practiced behavior, and when the pressure is on, they can often revert to command and control and not understand the impact that that has. So
absolutely.
The first stage is that understanding of self. But you made a really insightful and profound, which was profound to me at a point when we were talking in preparation for this, that a lot of business owners will focus on strategy, on content, on delivery of objectives and operational, getting stuff out the door, on firefighting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what they're not focusing on is the key role of process. Now, I'd like you to talk to that and to explain what you mean by that.
I would love to, because this is an area that I feel really needs communicating, not just in the business world and across other domains of life, but in the therapeutic world and healthcare. I see such a problem in people going straight into treatment planning, straight into strategy, as you say, for what we need to do to deliver the outcome, without the core concept of how the human body works and how the human brain is set up. We are fundamentally social beings. And what that means is, aside from the fact that we're mammals, you know, we're at the evolution of getting to the thinking brain is a higher evolved process. So therefore, when we are under situations of threat, anything that is dangerous, and when I say that, I don't just mean maybe stepping out onto the road in a car traveling towards you very quickly. I mean, all sorts of threat, financial threat, social threat, they're going to excite and activate parts of our brain that then drive us to very primal type behaviors. So demanding, controlling type behaviors is often going to be a sign of someone who's actually in a state of fear and concern. And who hasn't been in this state over the last 18 months?
Yeah,
like we have got so much to connect over through this pandemic, but what I can talk through is how we can utilize that neuroscience knowledge of how the brain works to explain our behaviors, to give us choices. And I think this is where the missing part is for a lot of people. If we jump straight to strategy, if we jump straight to ideas, what we're missing is the process. And I have this phrase that I use a lot in my work, which is process over content.
Mel introduces this idea about process over content. This is a point of pause. If we are, as she would call this, regulated, if we're in a heightened state of anxiety, of anger, of fear, we're likely to come at it in an unhelpful state. So controlling behaviours, anger behaviours, is someone that isn't regulated or isn't calm, isn't in a state of mind that's conducive to achieving a solution. And they dive straight into technical strategy. So what you're about to hear now is a really clear explanation, a fascinating insight as to, if you were to insert a pause at that point before you go dive into strategy, before you dive into a solution to the problem, let's sort process out how and why
we do what we do. This is about the quality of the relationships. The first thing about process is about getting the quality of the relationship right. It's about ensuring trust is there. Then Mel's going to talk about the second stage, which is formulation, ensuring that we're all on the same page. And so we can ask the question, what is happening that's maintaining the problem, that's ensuring that the problem isn't being solved, that's keeping you in a kind of stuck state? If you can get these two things right first, you know, you've got the quality of the relationship right, the trust right, i.e. process, and everybody's on the same page, and asking the simple question around what's keeping us stuck, you know, what's keeping the problem in place, then, and only then, are we in the best place, once we all understand the full picture, to come up with an appropriate technique or strategy. So back to Mel.
So imagine an upside down triangle with process on the top left corner, formulation on the top right, and technique or strategy on the bottom corner, and
so
balanced
process, formulation, and then technique and strategy on the bottom.
At the bottom, yeah. So already looking at that triangle, it's a very wobbly triangle if you go straight for strategy. What we need to do is head straight up to process. And what I mean by process is the how and the why of what we do rather than the what we say. So when I'm at work or when I'm interacting with teams, we look at the way that people relate to one another. How do they trust one another? Process is all about the quality of our relationships. And there's a lot that we can pay attention to when we know things are not going well versus when it is going well. And we're talking here about core safety. If I trust you, Gavin, I'm going to tell you things. If I don't trust you, I'm going to be in a state of hiding back or defensiveness. And you're going to pick that up instantly, even if you're not a very particularly knowledgeable person in these areas. We know, our body tells us, doesn't it? So I can teach you ways to tune into that. And once we've got that core safety and trust, we did choose our name for a reason, trust psychology and trust pain management. Then formulation is, once we've trusted one another, are we on the same page? Now, formulation to psychologists and other professionals that use that term is a really deep understanding of what is happening and why. It's far removed from diagnostic criteria and much more about understanding individuals and understanding the situation. So if you've got it, we trust one another, we're on the same page about what the problems are, we've got a shared language and understanding, then technique just flows, strategy just happens, the thinking brain can kick in, and all of those really clever ideas that the human species has come up with, all of our models, they make sense. But what I always say to people, if the strategy ain't working, it's not because it's the wrong strategy necessarily, you need to go back to process and formulation every single time.
I love this clear explanation. Like any tradesman would say, most of the finish is in the preparation. It's the work you do to prepare the job, the surface beforehand. And what Mel's saying here is, before we jump into solution, let's get us all on the relationship right, get the trust right, get us in the right state. You, me, let's get in the right state where we're working together with trust and we're calm. Therefore, we can be creative. And then secondly, let's just double check, it's the formulation bit, that we've got a shared and clear understanding exactly what the problem is. Then we can jump. Then we set ourselves up for success. Then we can jump into solution. You know, then we can jump into technique and to strategy. Really good reminder for me, you know, what do I do for a living? I'm a strategist. I help clients come up with plans to scale and grow their business. And this is such a time reminder. Stop first. Check on trust, relationship, state. That's the process bit. And then check on the shared understanding. It could be the problem or it could be the objectives that you're looking for, you're aiming for. Get those bits right first before you dive into technique and strategy, i.e. coming up with solutions.
So let's take an example of a business owner that saw all of a sudden overnight team members working remotely. They had a significant drop in trade and in turnover. They were pushed into that mammalian fight or flight response because, I'm going to lose the business. How am I going to make payroll. I'm even going to have a business this time next year. To ultimately, many businesses further down the line, they have taken actions that have either meant sure their profits were not that much worse than they would have been, even on reduced turnover. Some have had a terrible time. Some have actually done better.
So yeah, yeah.
The point being is they're in that world of, hey, we have to adapt. This is brand new, uncharted territory. So the how and the why, the how they're trying to work out, the why is there's an immediate need. They probably then go straight to the strategy piece and the techniques. So what's the formulation bit? So you've got a management team in a business here. What's the formulation bit when you say we have a shared language and we're on the same page? Using that kind of scenario where they're trying to find their way, work out how to adapt and respond to this sudden sort of change of circumstances. What's the formulation bit?
I would say that is all about how we are able to communicate our understanding of the situation. Because if we come up with a different problem scenario as to why, we're really asking the question, what is maintaining this problem? So if I've got somebody in front of me that is having difficulties, a really key question is, why is this not getting better? Why is it that things that you may have tried before are not resulting in the outcome that you would like? And again, more often than not, is we're jumping ahead without understanding what the true issue is. And I would wonder whether business owners that have been able to navigate and negotiate this really difficult, stressful situation when everyone's in threat mode, have A, got some regulation skills themselves, probably intuitively. They may be already engaged in practices where they're getting good nutrition and exercise. They're perhaps sleeping well. But my biggest wondering would be about the quality of their relationships. People that adapt quickly have very good connections. And this doesn't just happen overnight. This goes right back to when we were born and what the quality of our parental attachments were and our early life experiences. So if you can, there's three for people to keep in mind here. It's to Dr. Bruce Perry, who's a neuroscientist in the field of trauma. So we apply this to people that have been through difficult events, but really the three R's are, number one, regulate, number two, relate, and number three, reason. And that is absolutely based, regulation, relate, reason, in the way that the brain is structured, because we have a trion brain that you've mentioned, the mammal section of that, which is the middle section, our reptile section and our top section. So the point here is most people intuitively, because we're clever human beings and have a lot of skills, jump straight to the rationality, jump straight to reasons, try and problem solve the problem. But you're going to do so much better if you regulate yourself first, find out what is happening in the relationships, because more often than not, when there's problems and you're trying to work things out, you need your team to be on the same page, or you need people not to be in disagreement with one another or fighting battles and losing energy that way.
What do you mean by regulate?
So let's go, a bit deeper into that. Our nervous system is set up to detect, to regulate our every organ and part of our body that needs regulation. So if we are
just digestion, heart rate, immune system, body temperature, everything.
Yeah, if you're regulated, you are stable. And if you think about it in terms of a foundation, if you're standing with your feet hip width apart on the ground, you've got such a stable base. Your body is regulated because certain things are happening in your system. And you've mentioned flight or fight. So most of us have this common sense understanding that the nervous system split into two. We've got the parasympathetic, which is rest and digest, and the sympathetic nervous system, which is the flight and fight response. So an absolute primal level, our body will respond to threat automatically. Like, we don't think about this, it just happens. So if I get an email in my business that has a very threatening content to it, whether it be financial or reputation or just a problem that people would like to address, my heart rate might start beating. I'm slightly dysregulated because I'm in threat mode and I'm responding to that situation at quite a primal level. And there's a really lovely way to think about this. If you take your fist and put, take your hand and form a fist, but keep your thumb on the inside of your fist. If we imagine that's the handy model of the brain, and I credit this to psychiatrist, Dr. Dan Siegel. Everybody needs to read Dan Siegel and his book, Mind Sight. It will blow your mind about interpersonal neurobiology, the way that our mind is absolutely structured to connect with others, and we need to prioritize relationships for safety. If you've got a good relationship, you are able to communicate, then you can go on and do all of these clever strategies. So going back to his handy model of the brain, if the my wrist represents the brain stem, that's our reptilian brain, that's absolute life and death scenario situation, then if I uncurl my fingers and my thumb is sitting in the middle of my palm, that's the limbic system, that's the amygdala and our awareness of threat in relation to love and belonging and emotional regulation. And the top part is our prefrontal cortex, which is the rational, most evolved part of the brain that separates us from many other mammals.
Problem solving, it's the creative.
Absolutely, all of that. Now, what happens in situations of threat, if that email lands in my inbox, I flip my lid and ping, the prefrontal cortex goes technically offline. I am now responding from mammalian, and if it's more threatening, reptilian brain. I'm not going to be logical in that moment. And we've all been there, haven't we? We're completely irrational, dysregulated. So the first thing that we need to do is bring the prefrontal cortex back online and allow ourselves to think.
So that's through breathing.
That's
Changing your states, emotional states.
Yes, absolutely. And breathing grounds you into the getting the parasympathetic nervous system back into action. And we do this automatically, don't we? If there's a moment of difficulty or if we're trying to calm our kids down, it's all about just regulating the state that they're in first. Then you can talk about communication.
But I think in order to be able to regulate, you've got to be aware, because some people will almost like press play on that well-practiced behavioral response.
Yes.
And if something triggers them, they're off the play, the record, they're off, they're having that unregulated response and an outburst or whatever. And it needs the presence of mind or the personal awareness to go, pause. Is this behavioral response going to help me achieve my objective?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd completely agree with you that a lot of the time we think we know ourselves, but a lot of the time we are acting out of absolute automatic response. So we are not responsive, we are reactive. And if I could say to business owners, if you can be responsive, I say this to my team all of the time, and not reactive, it makes the world of difference. And that the ability to do that is through discovery of yourself and understanding what's going to trigger your buttons, what different states, what might soothe you, Gavin, might be different to what soothes me as well. In a moment like that, if we lose our ability to think and respond rationally, it might be we need to take a step outside and take a deep breath. Yeah. It might be we just need some sunlight. It might be that I need a drink of water. But your key point there about recognition and insight is key. So it's about being okay to turn into our bodies. A lot of us walk around just aware of from the neck upwards, and we're just living in our heads. Now, that's all well and good, and the brain will convince you that it's the best organ in the body. However, there are other elements of intuition that are much better to attend to.
And as we said prior to this, that in, I did a lot of training around NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and I did a huge amount. I did some fascinating work about sensory acuity and looking at micro gestures, whether they be facial gestures. We did some really cool exercises when somebody would turn with their backs to us. And, you know, the NLP helps people identify when they're processing visually, whether they're processing, you know, thinking visually, whether they're thinking auditorily or kinesthetically.
Yeah, yeah.
And in terms of their feelings. And I at the height of the skills, I could identify whether somebody was thinking in terms of pictures, feelings or sound by looking at their body and their head and their breathing. From behind.
Yeah.
But when I'm working with clients now,
I'm able, because of that work, able to know whether in the head, and it's all the head-based thinking, which is what you were making reference to, or whether they are tapping into being more grounded and the other levels of intelligence. So I think that's the segue back to your point about other areas of intuition or of intelligence within the body.
Absolutely. We know that we have similar cells that are in our brain lining our guts as well. So when we talk about gut instinct, we are actually much more aware of the direct link to that intuition. And we know now about the importance of the gut biome, don't we, and the influence on mental health and mood. These are things, for some reason, it's fashionable perhaps in society to overemphasize the thinking part and the cognitive elements, because we like doing that. We like staying away from pain, and our bodies often represent the painful experiences or where the threat is held. So it's a very tempting thing, but quite a good way to think about it is the right left differences. So our left brain is much more the language centers, meaning making, trying to come up with things from a very logical perspective, whereas the right brain is much more of that instinctive. And when you talk about sort of sensations and images, the right brain is that the pictorial and the visual and the kind of raw creativity part. And what we know now from neuroscience and research is that when people have been through traumatic experiences, the right and the left brain are disconnected in those moments, which is why we don't have words for certain experiences. But we will be triggered in remembering exactly how it feels. And that's why we can feel we're going crazy or mad, because we sense something, but we know logically in this moment, there's nothing to be scared of. However, we're completely dysregulated, something's going on, and our body is wise. The body remembers. Bessel van der Kolk's beautiful writing about that and the importance of knowing trauma. And when I talk about trauma here, I'm not talking always about life or death situations. All of us have had key moments in our life which are hugely threatening from a relationship breakup point of view, a bereavement or a loss, changes in our circumstances, right through to car, historical problems with parent dials or difficulties that have happened early in life. And unfortunately, in our day-to-day work, we see a lot of people that have had horrific things happen to them. But with all of this knowledge and experience and knowing how the brain can be regulated, and this moves on to the kind of relating part now as well, how we can be in relation to others, there's so much more that can be done. People do not need to stay in those periods of difficulty anymore.
So the point about regulation, we've got to be aware of it. What would you recommend to somebody who maybe has a tendency to have an emotional outburst, if that's the right language, or have, in your words, an unregulated response? So the opposite to calm, it's accessing the limbic fight or flight part of the brain rather than the frontal cortex.
Going back to your point about creating additional awareness of self and being able to have people that you can go to that have insight into your behaviors can be really helpful. So do listen to the feedback of your team. Do invite situations where you're getting regular kind of correspondence about how you come across, because there'll be certain aspects that you absolutely know about, and there'll be certain areas that are your blind spots, or you've got quite a misattunement into how something's been received by others. We really do not know what's happening in somebody else's mind and body until we ask them or ask for their perception of what they see has happened in ourselves. So if you're having these emotional reactions, it's probably the case that you're dysregulated and other things are happening which you can attend to. But I would also be very interested in what people trigger what responses in you, because we have templates in our mind. We have schemas that our early life experiences have mapped in our brains. So the way I'm treated when I'm younger, I will expect others to treat me for the rest of my life, until I become very aware of that and have options or have worked through those experiences if it has become too difficult for me. So it's about noticing the situations that are triggering off those moments. And those triggers can come so automatically. It's not always the case that you're going to predict them or see them coming. But it may be, if we think about really what business owners might be sensitive to, moments of potential failure or criticism, or maybe not meeting an expectation that you'd set yourself and feeling you're coming below par. These perfectionistic tendencies, they don't come out of nowhere. They have a historical root, and it can be absolutely fascinating to get some coaching or go through an experience of discovery to work out what your own relationship patterns are, because then you have choices. If you can see it coming and you go, I can feel the pull. I can feel the pull of wanting to react in an attacking mode back to this person or be defensive. Then we have absolute choices. So sometimes that can just insight alone's enough if you've got good enough relationships in your life anyway. For others, it's going to need deeper work and more opportunity to go back and resolve some past issues that might need healing. What you're talking about here is co-regulation, and this is fantastic because when you can really understand the intersubjectivity of relationships, this is the bit that's so missing in so many of our understandings in business, but in healthcare and in other settings as well. It's always a dance that's happening between people. So when you get a pushback, the reaction of the other is going to then determine what happens next. So your reaction and your coaching of that other team member or colleague was really about staying calm. Intuitively, that made a lot of sense. But what you're able to do then, if you are in a regulated state when another is dysregulated, you, and I'm talking even at the level of if you don't know what to say to somebody, but you know they're distressed, it's fundamentally helpful to actually breathe deeply, even if your brain is ticking over going, I don't know what to say next. We've all had those moments with people. If you can center, breathe, and be a calm presence in relation to the other, you're actually helping their nervous system regulate. This is what parents and babies do every single moment. This is, and what your own experience of regulation was from the moment you were born will determine how easy it is or difficult for you to step into that role too. So another person's distress might be highly triggering for you compared to people that are used to calm presence in others.
So I'll give you a couple of personal examples around this. So we had some work done on the house last year, and I rang the electrician at one evening. We'd had part of the work he'd done was putting some Cat 6 cable in through the house to improve internet connectivity with everybody working from home. Anyway, it didn't work as it should have done. Mm-hmm. I caught him on a Friday evening, wrong end of the week. He got off on one at me because he thought I was not going to pay the bill. And okay. I really quickly recognized what it was about. I said, I'm paying your bill. This is not about your bill. I said, we paid for this Cat 6 and it's not working. I said, I'm putting my hand up and asking you for your help and your expertise to solving this problem. Look, I get onto my online banking on the app. Look, I'm doing it right now. And I literally paid his bill on the app right there and then. That's out of the way. And he's calming down. Now, here's the really interesting thing about regulation and some insight. Immediately prior to that call, because actually I left a message and he called me back, so he interrupted me. I was having a real challenge regulating my own behavior with my little kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So
who doesn't, Gavin?
so they were triggering me, and I wasn't managing to regulate my own behavior.
Yeah.
And then I find myself being outclassed in the level of dysregulation, and I immediately was able to calm myself and then change my state, ration with him, and surmise what the issue might be. Get that out of the way, and then So,
why process over content.
Why is it though that I could? And I don't want to go. It isn't about me, but why is it some people can do it in work or do it within that kind of adult to adult setting? The danger of talking transactional analysis, but adult to adult setting, rather than with their kids who.
Oh. Their buttons. Yeah. Yeah, very good point and very good question. So if there's a few things I've been thinking as you were talking about those scenarios. One thing I think that was really helpful in relation to the electrician that you were discussing to say, let's get to the process behind one thing that I need to attend to. And it was fear of the bill not being paid. So just by naming a feeling, you are often able to take so much of the heat out of a situation. If you've got an angry customer or someone who's dissatisfied, one of the best things you can do to help their regulation, as long as you stay regulated, is to name the feeling. And you don't need to, this is so different to agreeing with what they're saying. You might not agree or go exactly along with what they want to happen because you've got your own standards. Standard, you need to hold your line and keep your boundaries. However, to validate them is incredibly helpful. I can hear that you're upset about this, or I'm wondering if you're feeling like, because what we don't want to do is overinterpret someone's feelings. The worst thing we all go, stop feeling like that, or you must be doing this. Yeah, it's the worst thing to say to somebody. Yeah. We can be, so always remain curious and almost always comment on what you see. I can see that this is causing you to raise your voice, or I can see that this is something you want me to attend to now. I am listening to you. And then they will be able to regulate themselves and come down to, again, you're getting the reptilian brain kind of calmed for them, and knowing that the mammalian, like, we've got an attachment relationship that's trustworthy here, that we can then go to the reasoning bit. But why do kids trigger us so much? And it's absolutely true of every single parent that has ever walked the face of the earth, because it's so important to our ability to survive life, to be in close connection with others in safety, that it's not an uncommon experience that when our kids are certain ages, it's actually highly triggering of similar experiences when we were at the same age. And sometimes people repeat their parents, but their parents' style, and other people go absolutely in the opposite direction. But as long as you do it with really good intention, there's three words that I love when you think about all things parenting, which applies to adults too, of course, is the three words empathy with limits, right? So name the feeling first, empathize first. That's the regulation piece. So I can see that you're very upset about the fact that you're not allowed to go out and play right now because it's dinner time.
Yeah.
As long as you name the feeling and connect with where that child is at, then the boundary comes in second, then the limits. So I understand that you want to go and play. I can see that you're upset. However, it's dinner time. We're sitting down to eat now. Yeah. Or I understand that you're angry about that, but no, you cannot whack your sister on the head. Like, we absolutely have to put in the boundaries and limits. And this is the same as a manager. This is the same as a leader in an organization too. We have to be able to clearly put down where our expectations are, what the consequences will be. But what I would really advise is you don't go straight to that. You don't go straight to the consequence or the addressing of the behavior. Name the feeling first. The regulation in the other will happen, and then you can have the next part of the conversation.
Let's pause here for a minute for me to just remind you of the context of where this journey, this conversation, because we're going quite deep on some subjects. So within the context of psychology of self, if you're going to be able to get the best out of yourself and the best out of the people around you, before you jump into solving problems, before you jump into technique and strategy, you need to look at process, which is the how and the why of what we do, the quality of the relationships, the building of the trust piece. And then the formulation piece, you know, are we all on the same page? What are we doing, or what is happening that is maintaining this problem? So in that formulation part of the process, before we get to technique and strategy, we're talking about three steps of regulate, relate, and reason. So we just got into some depth about how do we manage our own state in the language that I would use. How do we catch ourselves in the moment when we're about to have an unregulated response, an overly emotional response that takes our brain circuitry away from the cerebral cortex across the top of the head and into that kind of fight or flight or that most practiced behavior. So we just had a conversation about regulating, and we even covered some ground around children and why they press our buttons. And Mel came up with this great example of empathy with limits, which I love. So now I'm just, if you remember, we talked about regulate, relate, and reason. I'm just going to dive a little bit deeper on relate and reason. These are the final two stages that form part of formulation. The end result of sorting this stuff out first is that we can then find the ideas, the creativity, the solutions to the problems flowing that much easier. We've done this stuff advance up front, you know, like my analogy earlier on, that's the decorator preparing the woodwork and sanding it down before he applies the undercoat, sanding that down back a bit before he applies the gloss paint. We've got to get this stuff up front, but no, what do? We just dive straight into problem solving. It's interesting and fascinating when I facilitate larger groups and teams on offsites. Everybody in intuitively or innately wants to just dive straight into problem solving. This has been a masterclass for me from Dr. Melanie Lee around making sure that the process and formulation beats are right, so that when we get to the problem solving, we'll do more effectively. Right, so let's now revisit the conversation with Mel. I'm going to talk about relate and reason. Fantastic. So we talked about regulation, and then those three sort of key stages: regulate, relate, and reason.
Yeah.
Talked about relate. So we've calmed down. We've got a level of awareness that maybe a heightened emotional response isn't going to solve the problem. We know that it's closing down the creative, the rational, the analytical portion of the brain, and in order to solve the problem, we need to reactivate that. So we've done that. So what about relate?
It goes back to then relating the fact that our core safety, once we are in a regulated state in terms of we're not in life or death scenario, the body's calming down, then the next thing that will make it the biggest difference to our ability to have, and one way to think about this is, you may have heard the phrase before, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah,
it's sort of psychology 101. A lot of people have heard about it. So again, think of a triangle, which is split into three horizontal sections. We absolutely adore triangle, don't we, in our therapeutic world. But the bottom base of that triangle is physiological need.
Yeah.
So you're talking every animal, every human being particularly needs their shelter, their food, their kind of core safety from threat, sleep. All of those things need to be met. And that's where COVID's been so dysregulating, because actually for some periods of time, our basic needs weren't even met. Our independence was taken away. So no wonder, as well as the threat of what is actually happening out there in the world, that we were back into these kind of core, quite primitive reactions. And if you've had any threatening things when you were a child, that's going to really set you back.
Interesting.
Then the middle level up from Maslow's perspective is the attachment needs, the love and belonging. So once your basic needs are met, you need relationships. And even people that say they don't or are happy in their own company, that's quite a different thing. Or there might be certain personality traits or biological differences, but fundamentally, we need safety. We are tribal creatures. We are really good in a group of, say, 200, like in terms of, you think about your close network, your immediate family, people around you after that. That's why the global impact of communication at the minute is so difficult. Actually, our brains are not able to process and being utterly overwhelmed by social media and the fact that there's thousands of people potentially who may know about you or may have some level of interaction. Your mind cannot contain that many forms of relationships that aren't of any more than absolutely superficial. So once you've got that love and belonging part of your needs met, and of course, all relationships are negotiated. We have rupture and repair constantly. No relationship's perfect. And we've got different relationships with different people in our lives. But it's about mutual respect, isn't it? It's about being able to regulate and have a sense of not having a dynamic which is unhealthy and again might be triggering back to other points in time. And then the final part of Maslow's hierarchy is the final top bit of the pyramid, which is ultimately self-actualization, actualization for anyone that gets there.
Yeah.
But really this, do we have purpose? Do we have meaning in life? Have we got time for hobbies? Have we got time for useful fulfillment? So business owners that have lost their mojo are trying to operate at that higher sort of section of the pyramid without really attending to, are my relationships okay at home? Am I arguing with my significant others, or am I giving time and space for their needs too? Because if there's a problem at that level, it's more than likely that we need to go back down a level and address these core things. There's nothing like having absolute support from the people in your life. It's so regulating.
I think that's been so challenged for so many people, you know, having to cope with children at home, if you've got young children, homeschooling, meeting on your deliverables of the business, even trying to save your business while all that's going on. So your basic survival needs and the shelter, etc., could even be threatened. Then you talk about, you know, that need for connection, that face-to-face interaction for so long was absent. And yes, Zoom and Teams, etc., was fabulous, but nothing like the connection you get in the same room as other people. And as tribal creatures, we were ostracized from our work tribe, our business tribe. So that could have felt very threatened.
Absolutely. And that's why a lot of people had a really big issue, didn't they, with the term social distancing, because actually we're talking about, please refer to it as physical distancing, but stay socially connected, because you do not want to socially distance. If you're socially distanced in the sense that you are not connecting regularly with others, you're not having dialogue, you're not having interaction, you're not having that to-ing and fro-ing in a relationship sense, you're not in a physical embodied person in the room with another embodied person, then actually the brain will interpret that as a very isolating situation, which we're getting into very dangerous territory then in terms of shutdown and not being able to cope.
You know, that's fascinating. I've just tried on those two phrases, social distancing and physical distancing, and what's the emotional feeling or response I get to the two. And I'm okay with physical distancing in the context of the COVID. Social, it just felt wrong. And I understand why now.
Yes, because actually we're hardwired for social connection. Yeah. And it's the more, I would argue, more than any other stress in our lives, relationship stress comes in number one. If you do not have things going well, and that cannot be a personal fault on anyone in particular, often highly complex situation, but if you do anything when you're trying to work on a particular strategy or problem, if you work on the relationships, if you're trust, if you work on the ability to communicate well, and obviously you can do this, you can educate and teach yourself to do this, then you're going to serve yourself very well moving forwards, because isolation ultimately at the reptilian brain level means potential death, which means annihilation, which means absolute fear and terror. It's not what we were designed to do.
So you asked a very pertinent question in the regulate section. And I know it was to do with a subset of formulation, but what's maintaining the problem?
Yeah.
And part of what could be maintaining the problem is your emotional response, your reptilian response. So if there was an equivalent pertinent or profound question for the relate stage, what would that be?
Ooh. Very good question. So if we're saying for a formulation, we're asking what is maintaining this, and for the regulation piece, kind of where you are you in tune with yourself? I suppose my key relational question would be, do I feel safe with this person? What's the kind of the quality of my connection with them? And we can talk about different levels of communication. You have that level, which is your, how are you doing? I'm fine, thanks. See you later. Or just the kind of small talk, very British about the weather often. Then when you have a level of trust with someone, you can get to the next level of communication, which is a sharing of an internal thought or idea. And this might come back to the example that you gave earlier about the pushback experience. Mm-hmm. If we say something in a meeting or in a coaching session that triggers something, and you won't do this intentionally, of course not, you don't know what someone's history is, and they may not know what it's about either, but they've been triggered, then something in that is not safe enough for them, that they may not then share what they truly think or feel about your proposition. And they might not know why, it might come out as more defensive. So if you're with somebody and you know that you're sharing things at deeper levels of vulnerability, because really you need to have incredible safety to be vulnerable with another. If you think about levels of intimacy, requires trust, that requires having there. And the biggest problem you get in attachment difficulties, and that's the kind of bond between a parent and a child or other caregivers growing up, is when the other is not reliable and predictable, because either they're going through their own things. So the world is absolutely scary for the other. So relationally, it's all about working on, are we okay? And there's, if you've ever done any assertiveness training, going right back to transactional analysis that you were alluding to earlier as well, I'm okay, you're okay. Mm-hmm. And not assuming it, really having to check if what I'm doing right now, and I had a meeting with some of my sort of team members recently, and it is about, you know, this is what I'd like to do, but what is your response to what I'm doing? Does this sit well with you at gut level? And if it's not, tell me now and let's talk it through, because you can negotiate, you can say the hardest things to say if you have a good enough relationship, and all coaching and anything deeper than that from therapeutic levels needs that core therapeutic trust.
Now, somebody listening, which just occurred to me, somebody listening to this might go, oh, well and good, but I've got a business to run. I'm not running a therapist session. So to kind of ground this, what we're saying is, as a leader, as a manager in an organization, you have a choice about how you show up and the impact your behavior will have. And if you're not getting a level of performance, a level of engagement, a level of, you may even think, compliance in your work, we're encouraging you, Mel's encouraging you to look at how you're relating to people, and actually, do you feel safe in the environment, and what are you doing to create a safe space for those that work with you to connect, to share, to explore, to create?
Yeah, and when you say safety, that's so important, but I don't want people to think about this in terms of physical safety or giving a kind of a nod to safety as in you've got what you need. We're talking about safety in relating. So that comes down to things like, because you're absolutely right to highlight, this is not about therapeutic understanding. You don't want to know, and neither should you, your employees or your other team members' sort of historical situations in their personal life, that other than what's relevant to the work, that's none of your business really. But what is important is that they feel that they can come to you. You are an approachable, predictable, consistent other in relation to the issues that they are going to be bringing you about their level of work. Of course, that's about owning up to mistakes. That's about putting your hands up and saying, I really don't understand what you want me to do. My role is not clearly defined here. Most of us don't come forward with that because our communication and trust level is not at that, is not necessarily skilled enough. We just don't, I think, put enough emphasis on the critical importance of it. You can say anything if you have the right level of it, sort of toing and froing in that relationship.
If you have that right level of trust, and it's safe for me, let's assume it in this context, I'm now a member of a team, I'm an employee.
Yeah.
I want to be able to contribute the best I possibly can with my skills, experience, etc., and not be in fear of reprimand or threatening my job security by providing challenge, for example, or by disagreeing. You want to create an environment as a leader where you can get the difference in thought and perspective and challenge and actually healthy, mindful, respectful, but healthy disagreement.
Absolutely.
The business will move forward. But as a leader, it's your responsibility to make it okay for people to be courageous in their feedback and their opinion. You talked about vulnerability, and I think she's really important. Many leadership, whether it's from a leadership book or a presentation or even an Instagram post, will talk about the importance of vulnerability as a leader. Mm. And what I think is possibly missed from everybody is, oh, yes, that's management technique 7-2-3, be vulnerable.
Understanding
the reasoning of why vulnerability is important. And you've really beautifully articulated that it's around helping to create the safe space. So the impact of the leader being vulnerable, sorry, let me ask that as a question. What is the impact on team members of a leader demonstrating genuine, I hasten to add, genuine vulnerability?
What a great question. And I completely agree with you that so many of these things are given lip service to, like the role of mindfulness as well, of being able we've delved very deep into regulation, what it actually entails and why it is that we do it. So if I'm working with a leader, or if you're in a sort of environment where a leader is showing vulnerability, let's think about what it is that they're doing there. From a process perspective, they're modeling, I am secure enough in myself. I am secure enough in my ability to regulate myself and be able to model that to you, because if you're not regulated, you're not going to be able to sort of speak to that vulnerability too. And of course, there's going to be levels, isn't there, when we talk about self-disclosure. We're talking about vulnerability. You're modeling a thought or a feeling expression that you probably wouldn't say to people that you didn't trust or that you were worried you'd get a very unpredictable reaction to. So I am experiencing anxiety or fear about this next stage that we're going to take. The reasons that I've got this concern are X, Y, and Z. However, I feel in my gut that this is the right response. This is the right direction we need to go in.
I guess I don't necessarily go down another tangent here, but what we're speaking to also is that people in the world of work can often present a different image. I do an exercise with corporate groups, so I call it pulling back the corporate cloak, as in you're showing up with this persona of who you believe you need to be, how you need to behave. And actually what's so much more powerful and beautiful is to actually be unashamedly you, warts and all.
Yes, just authentic self.
Authentic self. And that's what we're speaking to about. When you are vulnerable, you're being your authentic self. The people around you, back to the second point, you know, can relate to you more. They can identify with you more because you're just being authentic. You've been a beautiful human being. You've been a flawed human being.
You're allowing them to be their authentic self. If you model authentic self, and everybody wants to be their genuine self, but we are taught through society and through reactions of others that don't go well to put these layers and layers of barriers and defenses in, like you're alluding to. And one thing I'll say about not being authentic and turning up with a persona is, boy, does that take effort.
Energy.
Is that exhausting. So if we're coming at it from just a sheer energy perspective, and I think a lot of people that I speak to, when we get past those defenses and you just say, well, I totally get why those defenses are there for you because of everything that you've been through. However, what is it like to kind of slowly emerge and be your authentic self? It's energizing because it's our natural way of being. And remember that when you're being vulnerable with others, you are totally in control still. I think there can be a concern that that's going to lead to potential being taken advantage of. But if you know yourself well, you choose. This is all about choice and decision. You can choose how vulnerable you are and what you're choosing to say, still by being authentic. You still have that ability.
So regulate, relate. Number three, reason.
Yeah. If you have if you're regulated, and again, this is all a degree of spectrum, isn't it? We're going to be there one moment and not the next, but we're regulated. We've got our relationships. We've modeled it. We are connecting with others now. And through that, we've been able to formulate what the issue, you know, what do I think the issue is? What do you think the issue is? Have we got a joint understanding of it? Because actually, that's where a lot of relationship problems come from, isn't it? The lack of communication. And if you can really get to what really is the problem here, then the solution and the strategy you put in place is going to work so much better. And I find for a lot of people, the relating and the regulating is the absolute work. And actually the strategy and the technique is just pick up a book and find the thing that you would like to follow. You've got such a range of options over what is just applicable to your situation. But there are clever ways that you can utilize the reasoning and the problem solving. So I have got one tip I could offer in the reasoning bit, as long as we're understanding that the process and the formulation has come first, now we're on the technique. But there's a lovely little technique that I use a lot called the worry tree. I don't know if you've ever come across the worry tree before, Gavin. And this is applicable to everybody, because we all worry, don't we? And only when worry becomes more chronic is that anxiety, and only when that becomes more chronic is that a very difficult situation to be in, because our cortisol levels and stress levels are up that high for an extended period of time, which has a massive impact on the body, by the way. So the worry tree: how to solve any worry in three simple steps.
Bring it on.
I know, exactly. And this is part of it as well, that actually, if we can connect, now we've got the trust between us, because we've been having this conversation and we're formulating, kind of then the what comes next is, it becomes as an invitation or an offer. It's always great to get permission off others. Is it okay if I tell you this? Yes, please. It's a three-step flowchart, which I can talk through just very briefly, but it goes back to the core principle of understanding the why. So why do human beings worry in the first place? What is the point of worry?
Protection.
It's
fear of what might go wrong, so it's trying to keep you safe.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a trigger that something needs addressing. Really, yeah. Something happening that could turn into a big problem. So it needs attending to. For people to say, don't worry about it, is really unhelpful a lot of the time, until you've gone through these three steps. Because what worry stops us doing is taking action. So if you are in a worried state, you've got the fear, fight and flight response kicking in, you are effectively paralyzed in action. So if you think about worry equaling action paralysis, then it takes on a whole new meaning. Because a lot of people just sit and worry, don't they? Or you worry on the way home and you're distracted from what it is you should be doing. You're immobilized. Therefore, the way to take steps towards being away from worry is to mobilize yourself. So step number one would just be to write down, and this is very left brain, so this is the point that we're getting in terms of language and meaning. Step one is, ask yourself, what specifically are you worried about? So if I am worried about going to a hospital appointment, or if I'm worried about a job interview, it's kind of obvious what I'm worried about there. I might not get the job, or I might get bad news at the hospital, but it's getting underneath that in terms of, what is the greatest fear here? So actually, the worry for the job interview might be, I might embarrass myself, or I might say something that is putting me in a difficult position. Or it might not be that I'm worried about the hospital parking, it's I'm worried I'm going to get told I've got a really significant illness. So once you've named the worry and actually put it down there, that in itself can be quite liberating, getting it out of the brain onto paper, because now it's not left in a loop and it's a problem to be solved. So all of a sudden we can use this reasoning part of our brain. So write it down. Step two is asking yourself the question, is this important enough? Which sounds odd, because you wouldn't really worry about things that aren't important. However, we could repeat this task with many different things that are flying through our brain. So what this number two step does is, it helps you prioritize of all of the worries that are running through your head that you've written down, which one's the important one to deal with first. And if this genuinely isn't that important, so I'm on my way home and someone blanks me, imagining we're going back to face-to-face contact, as they walk past me in the street and I go, oh my gosh, what have I said to upset them? Or what have I done? Like, in the grand scheme of it, it's not that big a deal. Just a little, you know, in relation to maybe what's happening in the business or something. So if it's not important, let it go. Or a moment of disagreement over road rage or whatever it might be. Let it go. You have to take the step towards it first. So if something's on your mind and it's not important enough, it's wasted energy. So if we go down to step three, then we'll have established something that you've specified as being a worry. It definitely is important. It matters to you. Then step three is only one final question left. And this goes right back to getting to a point of mobilizing an action. You're worrying about something. It's important. Can you do anything about this worry right now? Because all anxiety is future focused. All generally depression is past focused. If we're in the present, things are a lot more copable with. We can manage. So that key question of, can I do anything about it right now, is such a helpful step to action planning, because you say, actually, yes, I can. I can ring this person to take the next step forward, or I can remind myself to pick up the phone and have that conversation with that person, or I can start putting money aside in the eventuality of this. If the answer is no, because it's 3 a.m. in the middle of the night, no, I can't do anything about this right now, let it go, but do the worry tree again at a point in time when you can action it. So we're really getting to the point of, what do you need to do before you can let it go?
So those three questions in the worry tree again. What specifically are you worried about? Secondly, is this important enough? And third, can you do anything about it right now? And if the answer is no, then the only option is to let it go.
Mindfulness often talks about this ability to let things go and just come back to center. But until you know yourself that you've taken from a problem solving, once we're into this reasoning problem solving stage, you need to know that things are in your control and you've got choice over it. So once you've gone through the steps that you feel you can action at this point in time, then letting it go is going to be a physical possibility. If there's something niggling, if people come back to me and say, the worry tree didn't work for me, Mel, it's often that there is another piece of action, this can I do anything about it, that they are avoiding or not addressing. And I would guess that's probably something about what's happening in relationships as well. But we really need to pay attention, because if you can genuinely let it go, then it has made a very significant difference to take that step. So even going through the process of it can tell you what if there's something else bothering you about it that's probably got a more historical root, is not about the present, might be an echo of some past issue.
So the I think that the key message is to bring back to anybody listening to here is that if we're going to create a shift in performance of ourselves in the world of business, or we're going to create a shift in performance in others, we start with ourselves, an understanding of ourselves. And there's three things that we can do, a process of regulate, relate, and reason. So many will dive straight into the reasoning, the working out, the planning, the strategizing, the coming up with a solution, but they're not paying attention to the important parts of the frame of mind, regulating that first, then working on the safety within the team. So you're in the right frame of mind, you're in the right state rather than a right state, in order to be able to more effectively reason.
Absolutely. Things are so much easier when the first two things are in place. Actually, what you'll find is it might be team members come up with strategy or ideas. If you went in at a very controlling, unregulated level and tried to push things through, you'll just be amazed at letting the regulation happen first.
And so if anybody listening to this conversation wants to find out more about you, Mel, and about trust psychology and trust pain management, how do they do that?
Oh, thank you, Gavin. Yes, you can contact me through my LinkedIn profile. I'm Dr. Melanie Lee on LinkedIn. And we've got two websites, Trust Psychology, which is the www.trustpsychology on all one word, .co.uk. And the same, but with trust pain management, it's trust-pain-management. And we're based in the Northeast, but operating further afield than that too. We've got an international collaboration going on with America right now, which is very exciting because of a model that they've created at the beyondhealingcenter.com. Yes, we've got our websites will be much improved in a little while's time as well, because we're putting some investment into that. But in the meantime, that's the best place to get us.
And then we're going to continue this conversation, aren't we? And the kind of the second phase of this is the psychology of others. So once we've paid attention to how we are showing up and relating with others, then we can start to look at how we can create that trust amongst teams and get the very best out of those teams. So that's for an episode to follow. So Dr. Melanie Lee, thank you so much for your time. That was a, an amazingly fascinating conversation. I love this stuff. Anybody listening would obviously get, obviously have gathered that by now, and hopefully we've conveyed it in such a way that you can grab hold of it and that you can pay more attention to how you regulate, how you relate, and how you reason. Thank you, Mel.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success, and create more impact.